This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
So Parshas Shemos, a very interesting sedra. We'll try and get through. We've got a lot on the sheet, but let's see if we can get through it quickly. The first point is a very interesting one. Have you ever thought, have you ever pictured in your mind's eye Moshe Rabbeinu going into the palace of Paro, negotiating, remonstrating, warning the Egyptian king? Moshe Rabbeinu, where did he get this confidence from? It must have been terrifying. And he walked into the palace of Paro, and seemingly, so far as we know, he didn't blink an eyelid. And no doubt it was based on a huge amount of Yirah Shamayim and confidence in being a Shliach Hashem. But there is some interesting Ibn Ezra in this week's parasha, which I think addresses this question. Take a look, please, at the first box. It's the Ibn, if you're listening online, please email me at j.golkwood@gmail.com. I'll happily send you the handout. Ibn Ezra says, "Ulai sibeb Hashem zeh shigadol Moshe b'beis hamalchus. Maybe Hakadosh Baruch Hu orchestrated that Moshe Rabbeinu would grow up in the palace of the king, liyos nafshei al madrego helyona, b'derech halimud v'haragilus, that he would get used to sort of a majestic royal life that would instill him in a certain dignity, a certain refinement, a certain confidence." Because if you grow up as a slave, your confidence and your breadth of mind is narrow. Halo Sira, I'll show you that he's got this confidence, says Ibn Ezra. He felt confidence enough to kill the Mitzri because of the violence that he was perpetrating. And he saved the daughters of Midian from the shepherds, because of, again, the incident at the well. So you see that, says Ibn Ezra, that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu has this very unusual background of, as a child, going off to the palace of Paro and being brought up there, it was in order to give him a sort of a royal background which would instill him in the confidence that he would need to fulfill his life's mission. It's interesting. In the biography, I think it was there, I heard somewhere when Rabbi Yisrael Belsky, he was reminiscing about his youth, his early childhood years. And he said that whenever his mother puts him to bed as a young baby, she would, of course, say Shema with him. But there was one childhood song that they would always sing together. And what was that song that Rabbi Belsky's mother sang to her young son? It was not a Jewish song, but it was the song, "You Are My Sunshine." And I thought it was fascinating. Belsky, I didn't know him. I didn't have the zchus to ever meet him. But having read his biography, having read and heard about him, he was clearly an outstanding individual. And he had a breadth about him. He had a confidence about him. And perhaps, you know, you can trace it back to that bedtime lullaby, that a mother can sit with a child and can sing, "You Are My Sunshine." No doubt that fills a person with tremendous warmth and affection and feeling appreciated and loved. And that engenders a confidence to help a person fulfill their life's mission. Interestingly, I read a book last summer by Joseph Telushkin, a fascinating book about the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And he makes a very interesting point. When Senator Joe Lieberman, I think it was in 2000, he was very close to becoming the Vice President of America. And I think he lost out to Al Gore by a very small margin. And when he was campaigning, and he was going from city to city, it was top secret which hotel he would stay in. No one knew. It was top secret. The Secret Service kept it, the intelligence agents kept it very quiet. And the press didn't know, no one knew. But yet, says Senator Lieberman, that whenever he got to the hotel, sure enough, there was food waiting for him from the local Chabad. So how on earth did they get to know? And he says it was a mystery to him. But Rabbi Telushkin says an interesting insight, from if I remember correctly. And he says that, you know, Chabad Yeshiva Bachurim, I'm not so familiar with it, but I understand that in many yeshivas, they go out onto the streets and they put on tefillin. Now, if you're a 15 or 16-year-old boy and you're standing on a street corner and you're stopping people saying, "Excuse me, sir, are you Jewish? Would you like to put on a pair of tefillin?" That creates a certain, you know, thick skin, a certain boldness. And that perhaps explains how the local Chabad in all of these different cities were able to find out things that all the press and no one else could find out. Okay, the second reason the Ibn Ezra gives, also very interesting, if Moshe Rabbeinu would have grown up amongst the Jewish people, and they knew him from a young age, they wouldn't be scared of him. They wouldn't have a certain reverence for their leader. They would just look at him like one of them. It's very hard for a person who's grown up in a particular town to go back after years in yeshiva or learning or whatever, to go back to that town and become the rav in that town. Because the older people in that town saying, really? You're our rabbi? You're going to preach to us? You're going to paskin our shailas? I went to your shalom zacher. I remember when you were a little kid running around in the shul. And they can't really, I wouldn't say take them seriously, but they couldn't show the reverence that is needed. And therefore, Moshe says, Ibn Ezra, perhaps Moshe Rabbeinu didn't grow up amongst Klal Yisrael for that very reason, because he needed to be in a position of leadership, of reverence from Klal Yisrael. Okay, let's press on. So the Pasuk says in the beginning of Perek Beis, Vayigdal hayeled, Moshe Rabbeinu grew up, Vatzviyehu lebas paro, Vayihi lo lebein, Vatikra shema Moshe, Vatome kimina maim mishisihu. Moshe Rabbeinu is called Moshe, named by the daughter of Paro. Kimina maim mishisihu. She drew him out of the water. Now, it's very interesting. Moshe Rabbeinu had 10 names. The Medrash says, Yud Sheimos Nikrulo Lemoshe, the second box of paragraph 2. What were the names? Some very beautiful names. Yorad, Chover, Yukutiel, Avigdor, Avisoichai, Aviznoach, Tuvia, Shmaya, etc., etc. So he had some very beautiful names. Why did the name Moshe stick? How come that name is the name that we all refer to Moshe Rabbeinu? Why Moshe? This is the name given to him by Basia Bas Paro. Well, how did that happen? So there's a very interesting Sephorna, but let me preface this Sephorna by the following anecdote. And this I heard from Rabbi Berlwein. Many of you may have been there and seen it, but there is an amazing memorial in Yad Vashem for Rahman al-Islam, for the 1.5 million children who died in the Shoah, in the Holocaust. It's relatively new, I think 15 or 20 years old, and it's a very clever and very powerful memorial. What is it? You walk into a dark room, and as you walk into this dark room, there is one candle, which is in the center of this room, and you have to walk in a pathway around. And as your eyes are sort of acclimatizing from the bright Jerusalem sunlight, and you go into this darkish room, and you see the one candle, and then your eyes acclimatize, and then you look around, and you actually see, through the genius of this designer, this architect, he has positioned glass and mirrors in such a way that one candle reflects 1.5 million points of light. And you're looking around, you see an amazing number of points of light. Of course, each one to represent one of the neshamas of these children that were never killed in the Shoah. And at the same time, they're playing a recording. What is the recording? It's a recording just of names. Names of, I think there's about 30,000 on the recording, of names of children representing each of the 1.5 million children who were killed. And you go around and you hear names, you know, Yosef Levy, 3 years old, Pinsk. Sara Greenman, 2 years old, Warsaw. Moshe Cohen, 6 years old, Lvov. And the names go on and on, as Berlwein says, until you can't take it anymore. And then you go out of this memorial, again, out into the bright Jerusalem sunlight. And Berlwein says to himself, you know, I didn't hear my name. I'm of the age, says Berlwein, and I was a child at that time, and I didn't hear my name. What's the lesson for me? And his point is that he has some sort of survivor feeling, and survivors live life differently to anybody else because they feel they've been saved for a purpose. They have a certain mission in life. And that really is what the Sephorno is saying. The Sephora is saying that Moshe Rabbeinu has many beautiful names, but the reason why we call him Moshe but everyone refers to him as Moshe, and in his lifetime he was called Moshe, Vaidaba Hashem el Moshe Lemur, is because every time someone said the word Moshe, he would be reminded that he's a survivor. There he was, a baby, floating in a basket down the Nile. He was a goner. Therefore, the grace of God go I. And every time he would be called Moshe, he has a reminder, Ki min hamayim mishisihu, I drew you out of the water, and you've been spared, and you are a survivor, and therefore you have a mission in life. So therefore, says the Sephardim, the reason why the name of all the 10 names Moshe Rabbeinu has, the name Moshe stuck to remind Moshe that he was a survivor and that he has a mission to complete in life. Okay, now the next idea, I must be honest with you, I think I've once said this before, I try very hard not to repeat ideas in my Parsha Shiurim, but this one, I don't apologize for because it's magnificent, and I think I did say it once before. It's a short idea, but I heard it from Isaac Bernstein, Zichron Livracha. He prefaced this idea, and Rabbi Bernstein, for those who know him, he's on the OU Parsha app. You can get the recordings. He was Nifta, I forget exactly, probably 25, 30 odd years ago. I think it was 1994. I remember where I was when I heard. I was on the staircase going up to the Nir Beis HaMedrash. And it was one of those moments. He was such a wonderful, magnificent personality and darshan that it was a moment that people remember where they were when they heard the terrible news of his untimely passing. He gave shiurim here in London. And it was a sellout. And yeah, he was a magnificent Talmud Chacham and orator. Anyway, he said he gave these shiurim for many years in Nei Yisrael. And he said, before he explained this idea, that this is probably the most amazing idea that he's heard from anyone, anywhere. So with that introduction, I can not apologize for repeating it. I think he said he heard it from an Alte Yacher, from an old German Jew. But listen to this idea. We know that there are different levels of understanding Torah. There's Pshat, there's Remez, there's Drush, there's Soit, Pardes. Let's take a look at the Pasuk. The Pasuk says in Shmoy's space, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayhi Bayom Mohim, and it was in those days, Vayigdal Moshe, Moshe grew up, Vayetze El Ochim, and he went out to his brothers, Vayar Besidlosom, and he saw their burdens, Vayar Ish Mitzri, Make Ish Ivri, and he saw an Ish Mitzri hitting, smiting, an ish ivri me'ochi from his brothers, by yifen koi v'choi, and he looked this way and that way, by yar ki einish, and he saw that there was no man, by yach es ha-mitzri, by yitmeneyu b'chol, and he smote the mitzri, and he buried him in the earth. Fine. So again, there's paradis, there's different ways of understanding Torah. The poshup shat in this posuk is simple, that Moshe Rabbeinu grew up, he went out, he saw the persecution of Klal Yisrael, he saw an ish mitzri hit an ish ivri. He looked around, there was no one around, Vayaches HaMitzri, and he hit the Mitzri Vayit Menei B'chol. That's the Poshup Pshat in the Pasuk. However, Drush, sort of a homiletical explanation, you can say something different. Moshe Rabbeinu, as we mentioned, grew up in the palace of Paro. Now think about it. His mother was Basya Bas Paro, and therefore really he was like a grandson of Paro. He was therefore an Egyptian prince. He grew up in the palace. And on one hand, he felt and identified and saw, lived some sort of an Egyptian life. On the other hand, he went out and he recognized that he was very much a Hebrew. He was very much an Ivri. And not only that, look how miyuchas he was. His mother was Yecheved, who was the daughter of Levi, the son of Yaakov Avinu. So he was a great grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu, of Yaakov Avinu. And on Amram, it was just one generation away. So on one hand, he was like an Egyptian prince. And on the other hand, he was the son of Amram, who was the god Ladar, the great-grandson of Yaakov Avinu, and from of the greatest yichus and stock. So that created like a tension, this inner turmoil. How am I going to cope with that? Who am I? Now let's read the Pasuk again. It was in those days. Vayigdal Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu grew up. Vayetze el Echov, and he went out to his brothers. Vayar besivlosom, and he saw their burdens. Vayar ish mitzri make ish ivri. According to this drush, it was talking about Moshe Rabbeinu himself. He saw the ish mitzri hitting the ish ivri himself. That's referring to this inner tension, this turmoil. Am I ivri? Am I Mitzri? Vayifen kovacho, he looked this way, he was a Mitzri. He looked that way, and he was an Ivri. Vayar ki einish, and he figured that you can't live like that. I can't be a human being like this. I can't have this conflict, this tension, this dual loyalty. What do I do? I can't sit on the fence my whole life. And he decided he cannot live like this. He smote the Mitzri part of him, and he sort of buried it so that he became Moshe Rabbeinu. An amazing, fascinating insight into another way of reading this pasuk. Okay, let's press on. Also, this I heard from Rabbi Bernstein, but in the name of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, who he had tremendous admiration for. Who doesn't? The pasuk says, "Vayetze." This is in Perek Beis. The next pasuk, "Vayetze b'yom hasheni." Moshe Rabbeinu went out the next day. "V'hinei shnei anoshim ivrim nitzim." And he saw two Hebrews, two Jews fighting. "Vayomer l'rosh lama sakeh re'acho." Why are you hitting your friends? Now, Rashi tells us who are these people. Says Rashi, it was Doson ba'avira. Wherever Moshe, the bane of Moshe Rabbeinu's life, they were always causing Moshe Rabbeinu trouble. So these two people, they were fighting. Who were they? Dos and Aviram. They were the people who caused Moshe Rabbeinu tremendous trouble. Says Rashi, Dos and Aviram, heim shehesirum in Hamon. They left over from the Mon. Remember that they left over from the Mon to try and show to show that Moshe Rabbeinu was wrong, that Mon wouldn't fall on Shabbos, etc., etc. They were always causing troubles for Moshe Rabbeinu. Says the MS Liakov. You look at the top of the next page. Kupshute, hainu. How did Rashi know that they were Dosan Vaviram? The Ka'am of the Yolif Gezer Shava Anoshim Anoshim. Because there's a Gezer Shava. It says in the Pasuk with us, Anoshim. And it says with the Mon, Vayosiru Anoshim, a Gezer Shava, and we know it was Dosan Vaviram over there. So likewise, it was Dosan Vaviram with us. Vaderech Tzachos, next paragraph of the MSD Yaakov. I can say the following in a sort of a lighter vein. Because Rashi's got a problem. We see many instances where they hated Moshe Rabbeinu and caused him a lot of problems. But here we've got a problem. Because I can understand why Dosan Shapir Sin Sono Osei, he hated Moshe Rabbeinu. That he wanted to kill this other person, or at least inflict serious damage to Aviram. So therefore, I can understand you're about to land the punch on the person you're trying to fight. Dosan was trying to land the punch on Aviram. So I can understand Moshe Rabbeinu stops him, and Dosan is very annoyed. I was about to fight him. I was about to land that punch, and you stopped me. Aval Aviram, madu ahoyokayes al Moshe Rabbeinu. Why was Aviram angry with Moshe Rabbeinu? On the contrary, who Ravis Rivai, Moshe Rabbeinu stopped him from being hit. So what's the problem? So says the Emes Liakov, an amazing thing. Look at the next paragraph. Obe Emes, nearly. The Dosan Va'aviram Achimayu. Dosan Va'aviram were brothers. Okay, the Ashkelon Parshas Pinchas, because it says in the Pasuk of Parshas Pinchas, Obnei Eliov, Nemuel, Dosan Va'aviram, they were the sons of Eliov, they were brothers. Ve'im Kain, Yalfin Mizeh. We can learn from this a very interesting klal. Shebein achim in yisarev zar. If you've got two brothers who are fighting, and a stranger, a non-family member, gets in between, yashlimu beinehem. You know what will happen? They'll make shalom, because blood is thicker than water. They'll make shalom between themselves. V'hakas yishoel azar. And they will direct their anger at this non-family member who tried to intervene to help out. V'daik v'timtzakal. This is a good rule, important rule. And I remember Rabbi Bernstein added, "B'didi hava uvda." I had a case, said Rabbi Bernstein. He can't go into details, but it's true. Family members sometimes fight. You try and intervene to make shalom. They make up, and you're the shlechta. You're the bad one. That's an interesting question. Interesting answer from this week's parsha. Let's finish off one further final idea that I heard from Rabbi Pinchas Roberts. In the third parak in Shemos, we have the famous incident of the burning bush, the snare. He was watching the flock. And he went out to the midbar. He sees this burning bush. And he sees the bush is burning and is not being consumed. Vayomer Moshe Asura Nova Eres Hamera Hagadol Madu Alo Yiver Hasne. Why isn't the bush burning? Now, Chazal Tela says, Rabbi Roberts, that Moshe Rabbeinu was selected as a leader because he was Noisei Ba'ol Chaveiro. He felt tremendous empathy for Klal Yisrael. Rashi says, Vayar B'Sim Loisom, in Perek Beis Pasuk Yud Aleph, Noson Eino V'Libo Lios Meitzer Aleihe. But the Medrash on this Pasuk is amazing. Look at this Medrash. Vayar B'Sim Loisom, Ma'o Vayar Shoyer Roi B'Sim Loisom. What does it mean? He was crying and saying, when he saw the persecution, the shibud of Klal Yisrael, Chaval li aleichem. I'm in pain. Mi yitzein Moshe aleichem halavai, that I would die and not see this. Ein lecho melocha kasha meleches hatzir. There's nothing harder than working with cement. For you know, sin kasefov, Messiah lekol echov echov mehem. Moshe Rabbeinu rolled up his sleeves and he started working and helping Klal Yisrael. Says the Medrash, Rabbi Loz ben Moshe Rabbi Yosef Gili Omer, Ro'o masu godl al kotan masu kotan al godl. He saw how the Egyptians were persecuting the Klal Yisrael, that the child would be given a man's labor and vice versa. Masu ish al ish, masu ish al ish. It was psychological, not only physical. They would give a man woman's work and a woman man's work. Masu zokin al borch, an older person and a young, and vice versa. For he leave his palace and he would go to see their burden and he would, as I say, roll his sleeves up and work with them. So it says, you would leave your palace and you and your safety and security, and you go and empathize and help Klal Yisrael and in Imo Enochi Batzara. And you show your brotherhood with them. I am, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to leave the higher worlds and the lower worlds. I'm going to speak to you. That's what it says in the Pasuk. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw in Moshe Rabbeinu that he turned away from his own private, comfortable life. Liros besivlosom, to see the savlonos, the sivlosom, sorry, of the Jewish people. That's why he became the leader. You see, therefore, an important klal, that a real character trait that is needed to be a leader is empathy, is noisei ol b'chaveirai. I heard an amazing story from Rabbi Roberts when we know Shneur Kotler. Shneur was one of the great Rosh Shivas. He took over from his father, Aaron Kotler, and was instrumental in building Lakewood for what it is today. When Shneur grew up in Europe, and in 1940 he managed to escape. He was engaged. He was engaged to the daughter of a Malkiel Friedman, Rebbetzin Rishel Friedman, and they were engaged for 5 years because she was in Shanghai. And they got married in 1945. And Shneur Kotler, when he was learning during the war years in Eretz Yisrael, largely with his grandfather, the great Rabbi Issa Zalman Meltzer, one of the great Rosh Hashivas of the 20th century, the Baron Kotler's father-in-law. And when he was going to leave Eretz Yisrael to go back to America, I think it was 1945, Rabbi Issa Zalman Meltzer, I think, was too old to travel. And he came to take leave of his saintly grandfather. And they were very close. He had learned together with him for all the years. And Rabbi Issa Zalman Meltzer came to say goodbye. There was a taxi waiting outside to take him to the airport. And Rabbi Shneur took leave of his illustrious grandfather. And Rabbi Issa Zalman Meltzer did not walk him out to the car. He just walked a few steps out of his flat, a few steps onto the stairwell. He embraced his grandson and gave him all the brachas before he embarked on his journey back to America to get married. And someone later said to Rabbi Issa Zalman Meltzer, why didn't you walk into the car? Listen to what Rabbi Issa Zalman Meltzer said. He said, this is 1945. There are many grandparents whose children were killed in Europe who did not merit to have grandchildren. And I couldn't enjoy the moment to the full, and because I feel the pain of those grandparents who don't have grandchildren getting married. So I curtailed my experience. I didn't want to embrace him fully. I didn't want to sort of go down all the way to the car. because I wanted to curtail my enjoyment because I couldn't live, I couldn't demonstrate it in that full way. I had to curtail and I couldn't enjoy the moment to the full. That is exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu is doing in this week's parasha. I once heard, I think it was Rabbi Roberts again, who added this point. The Gemara Bracha says that we make the Bracha of HaTova HaMeitiv. Why? What's this in benching? What is that? It says the Gemara Bracha is Memches in the base, the final box on the page. HaTova HaMeitiv B'Yavne Tiknuha K'neged Haruge Beita. That it was K'neged, the Haruge Beita, they were killed soon after, well, a few decades after Chum Bayis Sheni. And the Romans didn't allow the corpses to be buried. So Oysayim says the Gemara there, Shehnitnu Haruge Beit Legvura Tiknu Biyavna Tov Ametiv. Why the double expression? Hatov Shelo Hisrichu, that the bodies miraculously did not decompose despite not being buried in the hot Israeli sunlight. Ametiv Shehnitnu Legvura. The Ametiv is that they were given to be buried. But the question is, why is it in benching? I understand they compose a bracha, but why do we put it in benching? So Robert said as follows: while the bodies were being were waiting to be buried, and they were lying there, Nebuch corpses in the street. Imagine you were living there at the time. Could you sit down and enjoy your lunch when that was what's going on outside? They couldn't enjoy themselves. How can you enjoy yourselves fully? Only after the miracle of their bodies not decomposing and they were given proper Kvuras Yisrael, only then could you now engage in normal life and enjoy your meal one more time. And therefore, in benching, we dafka put it in there to remind us of this fact, that whilst the bodies were outside, we couldn't enjoy things to the full. We have to show empathy to our fellow Jew. Just by the way, amazingly, I'm just thinking now, when Rav Shneur Kotler mentioned just before, when he went back to America and he was in the kollel there in Lakewood, like a regular member of the kollel, until his father, the saintly Rabbi Aaron Kotler, was nifter, and he took over. And Rabbi Shneur Kotler was nifter young. He was only 64 when he died in 1982. And people noted the most miraculous fact that he served as Rosh Hashiva for 19 years, 7 months, and one day, exactly the same of his father, Rabbi Aaron. Exactly, to the day. 19 years, 7 months, and one day. And of course, it was noted at the time. And it was interpreted as a sign that he had been a very worthy successor to carry on his father's mission of building Torah in America. But you see that it comes from the empathy displayed by Rabbi Zalman Meltzer. That is really what leaders need to be made of. So there we have it. Five fascinating ideas on this week's Parsha, Parsha Shmos. The first is Moshe Rabbeinu's background, that very, very interesting Ibn Ezra, that two reasons why Moshe Rabbeinu has the unusual background of being, of growing up in the palace of Paro. Why? Why this unusual background? So one reason is, says Ibn Ezra, to give him the confidence of instilling him with his sort of majestic demeanor and confidence that he would need to fulfill his mission in life. And second of all, that he would be accepted by the rest of Klal Yisrael, because sometimes if you grow up amongst Klal Yisrael, it's hard for the older generation to give the reverence that is needed. The second idea, that beautiful idea of Rabbi Beryl Wine, based on the Sephardim, that Moshe Rabbeinu, of all the beautiful names that he has, Yukutiel, Shmaya, etc., Avigda, but the name Moshe is the name that sticks, Kimin Amayim Mishisihu, that every time he'd be called Moshe, it would be a reminder of his mission in life, that you were spared, you were a survivor, and you've got to do something. Third of all, we discussed that fabulous idea of a Bernstein in the name of the Alter Yekka, that different Kibayar, Ish Mitzri Maka, Ish Ivri. It's referring to the inner turmoil that Moshe Rabbeinu felt. He couldn't live like that. And then we had Rabbi Yaakov, that beautiful insight, the Dosan Aviram. I can understand why Dosan got upset. He didn't land the punch. What about Aviram? The answer is, you get involved in a family dispute, all too often, you become the Schlechter, they make up, and you become the bad one. And lastly, that very important idea that I heard from Pinchas Roberts, that Moshe Rabbeinu was selected as the leader of Klal Yisrael because he was Moshe Baal Chaveira, that he really felt the pain of Klal Yisrael, and he showed empathy with them, as per the story in the Midrashim, the story of Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, and the idea of HaTov HaMeitiv, that why it's dafka put in benching.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.